Welcome to the Creative Agency Account Manager Podcast. I'm Jenny Plant, and I'm on a mission to help account managers understand the agency business and develop an entrepreneurial mindset in their role so they can show up as a commercially aware advisor to their clients rather than a reactive order taker. Welcome to episode 112. Today's episode is going to be particularly valuable for you if your job at the agency is winning new business. And perhaps you'd like to know how to do that without having to go through a costly pitch process. It'll also be valuable if you want to know how to price your services on value and not number of hours spent. Win Without Pitching is widely recognized by the creative industry as one of the best quality sales training programs because it's specifically tailored to agencies. The book, The Win Without Pitching Manifesto, written by Blair Enns, is probably like the industry Bible. And if you are working in an agency and you haven't read this book, then I'd highly recommend you buy it. So today I'm thrilled that Shannon Lee, Win Without Pitching's Managing Director, is going to join me and she shares the Win Without Pitching principles, what it takes to circumnavigate the client's pitch process, the common sales challenges faced by agencies today, her advice for agency owners who want to stand out in the market, and lots more. So let's go over to the intro now. Today's episode, I am super excited to invite Shannon Lee, who is Managing Director of Win Without Pitching, which is a sales training company for expert-based businesses. Shannon spent a decade in senior marketing and communication roles in Fortune 500 companies before moving to a business development leadership role at a well-regarded Seattle design firm. She also spent 4 years at Catapult New Business, where she worked with agencies of various disciplines and size, building and leading their business development programs. Her time on the front lines of agency business development, coupled with many informative years on the client side, has given Shannon a unique perspective into what marketers are looking for in agencies and what agencies must be doing in order to compete and win, which is more relevant than ever right now. So Shannon's empathetic and encouraging coaching skills have helped her clients translate the lofty Win Without Pitching ideals into real behavioral change with lasting results. Shannon, a big warm welcome.
Thank you, Jenny. I'm so happy to be here and have some time with you today.
I can't tell you how thrilled I am. So I'm going to get into the good stuff, Shannon, because I know you've got so much value to share. So first question, how does the Win Without Pitching method differ from conventional sales training?
Yep. I think really first and foremost, we have deep expertise in our audience. So that's one of the ways that we differ from other sales training approaches or just methods out there. We really are focused on the creative professional and really understand how they think and behave and what their vulnerabilities are and challenges are when it comes to selling. And so we're kind of able to kind of be in their head and walk in their shoes. And that's one of the differences. The other is that it's an approach that is really values driven, not from just a value pricing perspective, but from the intention of really understanding, can we help that client? What conversations do we need to be having in order to uncover that, in order to uncover the success and the value we can bring to the engagement, and do it in a way that is conversational, not pitch-based and salesperson-like?
And I've seen you do it in practice, and it's pretty good. So let's talk about the agencies. What are some of the common challenges that agencies face when trying to adopt a non-pitching sales strategy? And how do you advise they overcome them?
Yeah, I think it's just what you said when they think about not having to pitch, like what's the challenge there? So it's really deprogramming. It's really reversing the way that they think about things. It is behavior change. So it's hard because they've been doing it for a long time, right? So like that's the first piece of it is mindset and behavior change. I think it's also understanding that they can show up in these sales conversations and lead and be the expert and push back and say no and create the healthy tension that's needed to really assess, is this a fit? Should we keep talking? And then also have the ability to talk about money differently, to talk about the value that can be created for that client versus just running through a list of capabilities. We design websites, or we do digital marketing campaigns, or whatever the case may be, and really translating it to like, what's the business benefit we bring if you decide, you know, you want to move forward and work with us, Miss Client?
What do you find generally talking about the value that we bring and the business benefit? That kind of language of the client that we need to be familiar with. What's your experience and observations about an agency's proficiency with that particular thing?
That's the biggest area that often surprises me. And I try not to be surprised by our clients' initial kind of inability to have a conversation around what are the business's challenges we solve for our clients? What are the ways that we measure success? Can we translate that to different forms of value for your organization? So it really is, I think, agencies are so used to being focused on their process and the things that they create and deliver that they've maybe lost sight of or not ever really thought deeply about. How do we really think about the business case here and how we move this business forward for this client? And how do we have a conversation that's more metrics driven? And it doesn't always have to be revenue gain or cost reduction, because it is fair to say one agency can't go in necessarily and affect millions of dollars in new revenue for a client. There are a lot of pieces and players involved in that, but they can affect change with the work they do specifically around some metrics. Maybe it's number of followers, for example, on Instagram, or the brand is being talked about in a more consistent way. So there's some voice of the customer research that can be done. There's a lot of different ways to figure out what metrics are important, figure out how to track and measure and monitor those, and have a little bit more accountability and skin in the game for the work that that agency's doing for the client.
Mm-hmm. Love that. What kinds of objections do you hear initially from agencies who say that they maybe don't know what the metrics are that are most appropriate?
Yeah, I think it's oftentimes because the client doesn't know is the objection we'll get. Well, the client wasn't sure, so we're not sure. So I think in these moments, it's very much that agency's job to plant some seeds, right? If we're going to be building a new e-commerce site, then what are the things that the client should be paying attention to? More conversion, more sales, more leads, less cart abandonment, right? If they have a product sitting in their cart. So I think the agency has to push the client a little harder in those conversations. Like, you must be getting measured on something. What are the things that kind of matter to you and your team in your day to day? What do you see that maybe the executives or C-suite are looking for you to achieve, and help guide these conversations a little more specifically? So I think a lot of times it's kind of the onus, well, the client doesn't know. Well, that's okay. If the client doesn't know, then it's our job to give them some ideas for what we think should be measured and how we think we can demonstrate success and kind of prove out the work that we're doing.
And like you said, maybe try to elicit the feedback from more senior client stakeholders rather than perhaps the point of contact that they're dealing with.
Yeah, that's a tough thing, is are you talking to the right person in that decision maker quadrant that we call it in the sales process, is understanding if it's a manager or director you're talking to, who else on their team needs to be involved? Who are they reporting into that might need to be pulled into the conversation? And there needs to be a little bit of just grace in how you handle navigating that, so you don't make that person feel less than that maybe is the initial point of contact, but help be their ally in pulling others in that are going to be important to creating future value for the organization, or might be a stakeholder that doesn't have the ability to say yes, but can say no because they have influence over the project. So it's a little bit of helping navigate that decision maker quadrant that sometimes is tough, I think, in the sale.
Very interesting. Could you share an example, Shannon, where an agency owner perhaps was initially skeptical about the win without pitching approach, but actually ended up circumnavigating the pitch process? Particularly, perhaps, I know you've got hundreds of examples, but maybe where procurement were involved, because I'm sure inevitably you get that kind of scenario where, well, we can't not pitch, or we can't circumnavigate this process because procurement are there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've worked with, yeah, like you said, dozens and dozens of hundreds of firms over time to help them navigate these moments. And there's a firm actually that's based in the UK that took a strong stance after coming to know our approach and actually drew a line in the sand and just said, we no longer pitch. And that was a big moment and a scary moment because it meant that they were going to lose some things and not be invited to some things. But when they sat down in conversations with clients and explained their reasons why we don't think a pitch process or RFP process is the most productive way to go about hiring a firm like ours and kind of outline things and then in turn put a different approach on the table, largely around, let's first see if we're even a fit. Should we keep talking? Let's then begin to have the right people around the table to uncover what's the value that can be created. What do we measure? What are the metrics, right? When they began to explain, here's another way to think about this, and just held firm, they did see results over time where businesses were more willing to kind of slow down and play and listen to what they had to say. And I'll say it was a shift over time that didn't always go easily, that did come with some pain, where they did walk away from some things that were kind of big and exciting, frankly. But in the end, they knew if they played the process the way that that client was running the process, they would be treated probably like a vendor on the other end if they did win the work. So that's one extreme, right? Where a client just decided, we're not going to pitch anymore. I think the other end of the spectrum is helping clients navigate some of those pitch or RFP scenarios where they aren't necessarily going to say no or walk away, but they're going to do some things to try to gain some power back in the sale by simply asking in the beginning, like, why are we on your list, right? Why do you want us to pitch? Why do you want us to respond to the RFP? Digging into what's behind that to really learn, did somebody recommend us or did you just do a Google search and pick the top 10 that came up for marketing for healthcare? And then also asking that question back, why do you feel you need to run a process like this in order to pick a firm that doesn't necessarily sell widgets, but sells ideas and creativity? So it's a little bit of their ability and kind of confidence to slow things down and not just say yes and follow whatever that client's process is, but plant seeds along the way to push back a little bit and learn a little more and hopefully be seen as meaningfully different as a result of that as well.
This, for some people listening who aren't familiar with Win Without Pitching, may feel very foreign. You know, a lot of people obviously know Blair Enns, they know you, they know Win Without Pitching as a sales training company, but maybe they've, I don't know, 80% of their business is through RFP.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't even consider doing it. And I suppose you are making it sound so easy. And I'm sure there's probably people thinking, yeah, but. And I'm just trying to think, what are the kinds of objections that you initially hear as to why they can't have that conversation? So I'll give you one and maybe you could speak to it. But
mm-hmm. Yeah,
some people say, well, I've asked procurement some questions, but they're shutting me down or they're not agreeing to meet with us in advance of the pitch. When people come with those, how do you guide them?
It's not easy. And that's the honest truth of it. And the reality is if a business comes to us and 80% of the work that they bring in is procurement or RFP driven, we're also really honest that we're not likely going to affect a big amount of change there if that is the majority of how you win your business. What we're going to be more interested in is that 20% that comes in the door where you're actually able to use a process like Win Without Pitching and have conversations and sell in a way that is more conversation focused versus pitch focused. So we're not going to try to guide that client around the idea that you're going to win without pitching, just do these things. What we're going to do is take that portion of the business that's heavily RFP or pitch driven and walk them through some tactics and ideas and shift some mindset and behavior for them to try to gain a little bit of power in that pitch or procurement driven process. And then they have to decide, right? That's when everybody has to look each other in the eye and say, win or lose, there's enough that adds up here that we're going to go ahead and play the game of the RFP because we can't get around it, right? Like sometimes you just can't. The business that I talked about earlier that's based in the UK that drew their line in the sand, they made a decision as a business that they were done playing that game. And it took them a handful of years to make a true shift and see revenue move in a different direction. And that was a sacrifice they were willing to make, and they did it, but it was not without some pain along the way. But what happened on the other end was a different business model for them and a different way of working with prospects in the sale and clients when they eventually won the work. So I don't want it to come across as, you know, we can get this done and change RFP and procurement, because frankly, there's more of it than ever, given what's going on in the economy and companies' eye towards cost savings and efficiencies. So I think it becomes more about how do you navigate those things in a way that doesn't see you solely turning into a vendor and giving concessions and just sort of sacrificing your mission, in all honesty.
I'm wondering if the firms that you're referring to, that I know two UK-based agencies of many that have worked with you who are successful, and one of them turned up to a call I was on and he was bouncing off the walls because they'd bought the anchor option. Now, that's obviously language that you use, but I would love you just to share maybe some kind of key principles or the key kind of stages of your methodology, if you can, Jenna.
Well, I love the example you brought up of the anchor option, and where I go with that is this idea of a one-page, three-option proposal. And that definitely strikes fear in a lot of people's hearts around, how could I ever have a proposal on one page, let alone three options on one page? There's more to it, right, than that. You don't just show up with that. There's part of the sales process that's setting expectations around that. But the whole idea, the principle there is the introduction of choice. And choice does a lot for your business when you're in a competitive process, because it allows you to really uncover what's going on for that client. What do they value? What's their budget? What might they be willing to stretch to? And it allows you to come back with different options at different price points that deliver different kinds of value, not posing judgment on those options. It's not that one is better than the next. They're just different. They're just different ways of working together. And so it becomes a really liberating exercise for the client on the other side, because they all of a sudden don't feel boxed in with one long, daunting proposal and one price and one way to engage an agency. They see, oh, there's different ways we can go about this. And maybe we don't have the $500,000 today that we need for the big anchor option, but we've got the $100,000 for the middle option that gets us a lot of value with maybe our eye on the future of the bigger option. And it helps the agency kind of control the comparison. Because when you give one proposal, one price, it forces that client to go compare you against others. They sort of have to. They don't kind of know what they're dealing with. When you introduce choice, I do think it just, it liberates things differently and they feel more considered and they feel as if you're thinking about their business a little more deeply and thinking about how might we solve this challenge in different ways, which is what they're hiring a creative firm to do in the first place, bring the full force of creativity to bear.
Amazing. So that's the proposal stage. What about upfront with the conversation that you're having? You've already seeded and, you know, some of the language that you use, which is brilliant and so effective. But what are the stages that you go through when you're talking to a client?
Qualifying is important. I think that everybody sort of thinks like, well, yeah, of course, we have to qualify. It's the one thing, though, that if a sale goes sideways and I look back at the course of that sale with the client in an after-action review, most of the challenges I can pinpoint back because they weren't qualifying properly. And so you have to qualify first and understand, what's the vision here? Maybe you're coming to me for a website design today, but why? What's going on that's driving the desire for a website? You have to understand who's part of the process, like we talked about earlier, who are all the key people involved in making the decision. Is there a financial fit, right? We got to talk about money and just understand, is there a financial fit? Should we proceed to the next conversation, which is the value conversation? And it's also in the qualifying conversation where you can signal if you're different, not only through maybe your expert positioning, but in the way that you sell. Because you take the lead from the outset if you're qualifying effectively and you are the one driving the conversation and the next steps. So qualifying is really key because it sets you up then to really have a good value conversation, which in our world, that's the next conversation, which is where you're taking that vision the client shared and having an honest conversation about, okay, if we achieve this vision, how are we going to know if we're successful? What do we measure? What are the actual metrics? And one of those metrics might be, frankly, that your client is not working 60 or 70 hour weeks anymore because they've built some infrastructure process. They have a website that's humming along nicely that isn't causing fire drills all the time, right? So there's a lot that can be measured aside from more followers on Instagram or revenue gain. There's a lot to dig into there. And when you have a really effective value conversation, it gets the client's focus off of how much you cost as an agency onto here's the vision we want to achieve. What's the right level of time and investment to get that done? And you're having this conversation together transparently, which provides a lot of integrity around giving that client a view of how you price things. And then being clear about, we've all followed this process along the way. We're all clear about where we are and what we're working towards. So when we come to that final conversation, the closing conversation where you walk through that proposal, you are letting that client know, okay, it's time to decide. We're going to decide if we're going to work together or not. And you should be saying those words in that closing meeting. You're facilitating a choice. Everybody should know we're there for a reason. We're going to do business together or not. Let's decide. Let's be honest and say, I like that middle option. Here are some concerns. Okay, great. Let's talk it through. But before that closing conversation ends, you want to get a verbal commit, or if the client's not willing to do that, you want to then be able to ask that question. Okay, sounds like you like the middle option. Is there anything that would stop you from hiring us today? Right, do a final sweep for objections. So I think it's just bringing more transparency and adult conversations to this process. And we're all here to decide, right, if we're going to work together, if it makes sense. So let's use that language and talk about it plainly.
Have you found a general reluctance to have the conversation? Because when I'm listening to you, and I'm sure everyone listening is thinking, gosh, it sounds so simple, but I just don't do it. Or, yeah, you know, what have your observations been of people's reluctance to have that conversation? What do you think holds people back sometimes on the agency side?
Yeah, I think it's fear of missing out on an opportunity. I think there's just fear driving it. Now, where does that fear come from? It's important to dig into. Is it your own baggage you're bringing to it and you're imposing some of that pressure on yourself that doesn't need to be imposed? It could be the agency is in a moment where we need to close business, right? And so there's pressure from higher up to get things done and close work. So then we start doing things in the sale and closing work that probably isn't the smartest revenue to go after because it's going to cause a lot of pain on the other end for that team that has to deliver it and the margins might not be there. So I think it's important to kind of dig into the why first. And that's a lot of psychology and mindset and behavior and really kind of understand what's going on there before we think about embracing a way that we sell.
You said earlier on that it actually takes quite a while to practice. I mean, what would you say to someone listening thinking, well, how long has Shannon seen that it's taken agencies? Mm-hmm. Or does it vary a lot?
I think it varies. But I think, you know, we see things like people come through one of our workshops and over 4 days really learn these frameworks. Then they go try it on their own and they realize, okay, I've got some of it, but not all of it. And I kind of don't know where to go next. So that's when you need to get repetitions in. And you can do that with your peers in your agency that did training with you. You can come to group coaching that we offer, for example. But I think it's about 10 times per conversation, frankly, before you start feeling like, okay, I got this. I know where I'm going. I feel organized. I feel confident. And 10 sales conversations sometimes is hard for an agency to have in a month or two, right? You're not often having that many sales conversations. So then you've got to find ways to practice outside of that. And that's where role playing and reps come in with, you know, your peers or others, and then that takes discipline. So that's why it's challenging, because you have to actively work at it. It's going back to school again and doing the homework and doing the practice.
So true. You said something so insightful earlier on. You said how you turn up in the sale and lead the sale is how ultimately the client will sort of continue to treat you. And this is something I see with account management teams, is they're in that kind of order taker role. And it takes them so much more effort. Whereas if the business had set out the rules of the engagement from the outset, do you see that a lot?
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, like, you know this well, right? We've talked so much about this and even done a co-present about this. How do you set the team up for success that's going to be doing the work? And it's so critical. You all have to be taking care of each other in that life cycle of the sale. And it's why it's imperative that the new business lead is showing up as the expert, is showing up confident, is showing up leading and talking about how this goes and what's going to happen next, and really taking a hard look at, can we get this work done? Can we help? And pulling that account team in at the right moments of the sale, or at least during the proposal creation exercise, to get their feedback, to get their expertise, to get their assessment of what could we do, what will work, what might be a risk. Because when that handoff happens, you want them to be able to pick up that baton and keep leading and keep doing the good work and uncovering the most value for that client. So the tone is set in your marketing, and the tone is set in the sales process and how you sell.
And at what point is the handoff for you? Like, how early should the team get involved in that new business meeting?
I think the first natural point's the value conversation. I think you can have somebody qualify that is not part of the account team. You can have a new business lead qualify, or the founder, who, however sales is structured at your firm, because you do want to be mindful of not over allocating hourly billable, you know, expert resources when they don't need to be in the sale yet. So I think the value conversation makes sense, because it's when you're beginning to dig into what matters to the client, their vision for whatever the initiative is, planting seeds if they don't have a sense of what should be measured. That can be a good time for somebody that's a subject matter expert to begin to enter the conversation. Certainly at proposal development. I don't think a new business lead should be solely responsible for creating proposals on their own. That's a lot of pressure. And you should bring the creative intellect to bear from your firm to sit down and think about, how are the options going to look? What are the different ways we can solve for this? And so that's another time when the account team should be present, should be helping.
That's very helpful. What advice would you give, Shannon, to an agency owner who really wants to stand out in the marketplace and perhaps not rely on pitching so much?
Mm-hmm. The first obvious one is how they're positioned, right? I do think it's important to be seen as meaningfully different from a positioning perspective. So that means, what do you do better than anyone else? What do you do that is uniquely different about your firm? Do you specialize in mobile app development for healthcare? Do you specialize in public relations and how to do business in the Gulf South of the US, right? Like, there's lots of ways to think about specializing. And I think you have to take a really hard look at that, so that you are seen as meaningfully different in the sale. You are not seen as a generalist, because that is where your power as an agency really resides. And then I think next, it's how you sell. It's how you show up and how you sell in the sale. That's another way to differentiate yourself. You are in charge of the sale. You are dictating what's going to happen. You are driving next steps, and you are demonstrating selectivity early on. That's creating healthy tension in the sale that can often get that prospect to be to kind of lean in a little and think, oh, I want to prove myself. I'm worthy. I can be their client. So there's a couple ways to think about it, but it really begins with positioning.
I totally agree. Just talking about the kind of current agency landscape for a moment, what are you currently hearing from your agencies generally about the agency landscape?
Yeah, it's hard. It continues to be hard out there. And we work with many, many agencies, and we talk with many, many membership associations out there that, you know, have hundreds of agencies as part of their master peer roster. And we just continue to hear that on the client side, there's more procurement and RFP process kind of rearing its ugly head. And we hear that things are slow to close, budgets are tighter. It's just, it continues to be more of what we saw in 2023.
Right. And how much do you hear agencies talking about the threat of AI? Generative AI is obviously playing a bigger role in the creative space with, you know, video production and content creation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like that conversation has shifted a bit. A lot of what we talk with agencies about or help them with when it comes to AI is, how can they improve their own business processes, or how can they create, for example, a new product that maybe leverages AI that allows them to price things at a different price point when budgets are kind of top of mind right now. We know a firm that has a flagship product, and they're a marketing firm. And if you want to work with them with their flagship product and have them completely take over marketing for your firm, it's probably about $250,000 over 12 to 18 months. They also recognize the market isn't necessarily buying that right now. So they've taken AI and leveraged it to help create content and do things more efficiently for a lower price point product, maybe $3,000 a month. And they're testing it, right? So they're playing around with what's the balance of still getting value and having that human factor, but leveraging the power of a tool like AI to maybe bring some efficiency in the meantime. So we're seeing things like that. I don't feel like I know if they're across the clients we've worked with anyway in conversations we've had, if there's hard evidence that AI has totally taken over. I still think it's an active conversation. And I think we're starting to see client concerns about it. And what I mean specifically is those clients that are highly regulated industries like finance and healthcare don't necessarily want their agency to just use AI to develop everything because they're plugging in lots of IP into these, you know, ChatGPT and other things where there's still some fuzziness about IP and who owns what and how to play that game, you know, in a fair way, especially for regulated industries. So it's a little all over the map still, I think.
I think you're right. I think we're at the beginning, aren't we? And you're right. It exactly mirrors what I'm seeing. Clients are still cautious because of IP and copyright. And in fact, I had Sharon Torek on the show, who's a lawyer, and she's at the forefront of AI. If anyone listening wants to speak to a lawyer who's totally at the cutting edge, Sharon is the one to speak to. And she was saying, look, at the moment, I'm not seeing any lawsuits, but I'm expecting them, which was quite sobering. So like you said, a lot of agencies are experimenting with AI, particularly for internal processes and making things more efficient. But I think they're developing AI policies, but they're not really seeing their clients are really buttoned up with it yet. So I think we're at the early stages, like you said.
Yeah, and I do. I have a couple of agencies who use ChatGPT, for example, to develop their proposals. So they'll take transcripts from their sales calls and dump it into ChatGPT and ask it to create a three-option proposal. And it's pretty darn good. But what they are seeing is they still need to have that conversation. So it brings some efficiency to it, gets their brains warmed up to start thinking about what the options might be. And then they go in and as a team talk about it still. That's kind of fun and interesting. We actually have a client who created a Blair bot and took all of our content out in the world that they could get their hands on and dumped it into, again, ChatGPT and created a Blair bot that you can ask questions to if you need help from somebody at Win Without Pitching because it's 2 a.m. and you're in the middle of a sale and you need help, right? So we got to look at that. And that was interesting. But what we also saw was the lack of nuance around the mindset and behavior and emotion that comes into the sale. And also, you have to be really smart at asking the right questions to get the information you need. And so there's a lot of talk around, we still have to do the work if we were to have a bot of some sort to help our clients know what questions to ask to get some of the things answered that they're looking for help around. So that's some of the other stuff I've seen.
First of all, did Blair have a problem with him, everyone scraping him? I mean, yes, I don't know how I'd feel about that.
Yes and no, honestly. And we were all a little nervous and freaked out, but excited at the same time because it's a direction we're moving. We want to play around with it, but it's more about, is that a business priority today? But he appreciated it. He appreciated more so that the client was trying to find ways to continue the training and the learning and spread the good word of kind of what we're doing. And this may be one way to do it.
I did read that it's the shape of things to come, that people that are coaching or consultant are creating their own bots. So maybe it's something that may be a business priority at another time.
Maybe, yeah.
In terms of other changes that you see coming up, Shannon, what are your thoughts on what we're starting to see? You know, this continued situation post-2023 where, you know, contracts are getting signed later, more procurement, et cetera. What else do you think we can expect in the remaining months of the year?
Yeah, and not to be doom and gloom, because I am really a positive person and believe we can all work through what we need to. You survive a global pandemic, you get through all these things, and it's like, we can do this. But I do worry that the agency landscape needs to think hard about really being able to explain to the client, why would you hire us? What problem are we going to solve for you? How are we going to create value for your business? How do we measure success? What metrics do we look at? I think we need to get better at building that business case. I think we need to look at different business models that are not time and materials driven and get rid of talking about our process so much and talking more about the outcomes and, you know, what's on the other side of working for a creative firm. I believe maybe you either talked to her, I read this somewhere with Caroline Johnson at the Business Model Company. And I think that is where it's at. I think they're doing very good work there. And we need to kind of disrupt and upend the business model of the typical agency out there in order for our market to kind of survive and thrive. Something needs to change. Something needs to change.
I feel like you do. Something big needs to change. And I think pricing is at the heart of it. Yeah. And like you said, I first learned of Caroline when Blair interviewed him on the podcast, 20% podcast. And that's what made me pursue her and have a couple of meetings with her. But what her and Tim Williams also is doing in terms of pricing and the journey that Huge took, the IPG agency that went through their productization process, that's one to watch. I think that is going to be quite interesting for the whole agency industry to watch, because just as you said, they've completely turned around their proposition and now they are focusing on the three big outcomes that they achieve for clients. So clients choose them based on the outcomes, which isn't currently, as you said, what we do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and it's all difficult stuff, right? It all requires sacrifice. It all requires some uncomfortable moments. But I think, you know, if our industry wants to survive, we've got to follow the lead of some of those folks and experiment with things differently and kind of be unafraid to have an attitude of experimentation, even if it's just for a segment of your business to dip your toe in the water. And we advocate for that with value-based pricing as well. Take a small segment of the business and put some skin in the game, right? Take on an opportunity where you just get paid for the outcomes that you deliver and just see what that does for a shift in mindset around the team that's working on it. What does that unlock, right? There just needs to probably be some risk-taking to think about how to do things differently.
Mm. To that point, Shannon, can you share some details about your next workshop so people can sign up for it and where to go to find out more?
Sure. So you can always go to winwithoutpitching.com. That just is the website that's got all the info. And our next workshop is June 3rd through the 6th. And these are virtual in nature still, 3 hours each day over the course of 4 days. And you walk away with real skills you can put to use in your next sales conversation.
Thank you so much. And having been through the training myself, I can honestly say it's transformational. And also the clients that I deal with, several of them have been on the training and just are all, you know, raving about it as well. So I think you're right. Experiment with changes. And if you're going to do anything right now to have longevity in your business, I think value pricing is one to explore. So for sure. Okay. Any final pieces of advice, Shannon, for agencies that might be listening to this that we haven't talked about?
I think it's really about what nugget did you hear today on this podcast or an article that you read or whatever it is out there in the world that you're consuming. What's one thing you heard about that kind of made you a little uncomfortable that you don't currently do, but you should go try? Just pick one thing, right? And go try it. Take a baby step, because I think that's where action and this attitude of experimentation begins to unfold. And you see something new and it energizes you, and then you're willing to take the next step and go a little bit further. So grab onto something out there today that makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable and go do something about it and see what happens as a result.
Love that. And Shannon, if someone would like to speak to you, is the Win Without Pitching website the best place to find you? How would they get
in
touch?
You know what? You can just email me at shannon@winwithoutpitching.com. Yeah. And Shannon's with a Y, S-H-A-N-N-Y-N.
Lovely. And we'll make sure to put that in the show notes. Shannon, Great. Thank you so much. This has been brilliant.
Yeah. So good to be with you today, Jenny. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed my chat with Shannon. Please go to the Win Without Pitching website to find out more about everything the company does and to buy the book and to look at their workshops that are coming up. And finally, if you're listening to this in April 2024, we are opening enrollments for our May Account Accelerator training for those in the agency who are responsible for existing client growth. So if your job is to manage client relationships and grow your accounts, check out the details on my website, accountmanagementskills.com. And I look forward to speaking to you on the next episode.